I first started in this field was strength over everything. And I look back even 5 years ago at programs, and I'm like, what am I doing here? That's how much we try to develop each year, you know, trying to get better every year. But now we're much more focused on movement. That's not to say that we don't still put an emphasis on strength, but we're so much more geared towards teaching athletes how to move correctly above everything else. And strength is truly a byproduct of our program.
I think we forget, too, like, there's a soul inside this. There's a heart. There's a person inside this training.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's what, to me, I think there's a huge aspect. They trust us with their body. We're not identifying those issues coming in, and we're not correcting things like posture, core, alignment as best we can. I want to make sure that I'm not setting my athlete up for failure.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
From the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, we are sending a huge thank you to each of our loyal listeners around the world. We appreciate you joining in on the conversation this week. This is the baseball podcast for those of us who love diving headfirst into personal growth. You love challenging yourself and your thoughts. For those who crave knowledge, and if there's a better way out there, we check the ego at the door and we go find it. You're in great company here, and thanks for dialing into the podcast. But first and foremost, we want to thank our proud sponsor of this podcast, our great friends over at AstroTurf. They are the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. And if you're listening and thinking about a facility upgrade at your park, you're thinking the no mow, no grow, no H2O solution sounds perfect for your surface. Make sure you reach out to the great folks at AstroTurf. See for yourself what they've done for ballparks around the country. And when you do, it's easy to see why AstroTurf has been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. Strength and conditioning for baseball. Boy, have we grown in this arena over the past 30 years. Wow, we've moved from a period in time where the guiding thought was that our guys don't need to lift and train to, okay, well, let's take the lifting we use for our football teams, let's apply that to baseball. To now, we're moving towards finding more functional and creative ways to train in a baseball-specific manner, which is playing a large looming role in the explosion of athleticism that we see out on the field, the record numbers we're paying attention to, the higher throwing and exit velos, et cetera, et cetera. And this is a topic where, for the most part, and for the majority of us listening into the show, we know enough to be dangerous in the weight room. So we dial up and connect with two of the top strength coaches in the country, guys who are very active on social media and also guiding elite college baseball programs, as we welcome into the show Zach Dakin from TCU and Nick White from Coastal Carolina. Now, pen and paper are a must. A re-listen or five might be in the cards for you with this one, as we open up Zach and Nick across a myriad of topics, including their specific approaches to training their baseball players, how do they help train speed and explosion inside their plans, plus how to keep training simple and efficient, especially when we don't always have access to the best facilities. Where there is a will, there is a way. Plus, our most loyal listeners will immediately resonate with their sentiments that we must always look to improve. We must continue to be lifelong learners and seek growth inside everything that we're doing. These guys were perfect fits for our show, and Zach and Nick absolutely brought it home today. So let's all get better together. Let's unpack baseball strength and conditioning with TCU's Zach Dakin and Coastal's Nick White as they join our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Get ready, coaches. This great interview is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for dialing into our podcast today as we're going to talk through baseball strength and conditioning, a topic that constantly comes up from our coaches as, man, we wish we had more content, wish we could connect with some great guys that could give us some ideas on how we approach this. Coaches know what they don't know, and sometimes that's from the strength and conditioning aspect. So we're going to get two of the very best on the call today that are really going to open up your thoughts and your ideas and how you can improve. Again, this is probably a take feverish notes episode, so go ahead and grab some pen and some paper. Make sure you're prepared for what's getting ready to come through the airwaves today. And we want to welcome in two of the very best inside college baseball. First, let's start with Zach Dakin, the strength coach at TCU. Zach, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Sheets. Really appreciate it, and hopefully we can give coaches out there some good information.
There's no doubt that you will. We were also welcomed in by Nick White, the strength coach at Coastal Carolina. Nick, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Thanks, Sheets. Just honored to be here. Appreciate you guys, and hopefully we can kind of give you guys some material to go home with.
Well, we're off to a great start by getting two phenomenal strength coaches out there to jump on the call with us today. And here's the backstory that brought us to this week's episode. As many of you know, Eric Cressy's been on our show twice, but we have his content as one of the only strength and conditioning shows that we've done on this podcast. So I wanted to bring this back to our coaches. It's always a topic, again, that we hear about, that coaches want more info on. So I went back to Eric and said, man, if we were going to go that direction again, who are some names that you would throw out as great potential guests for our show? And he throws out Zach, he throws out Nick as two guys that he felt like we needed to connect with. And again, I think that is a high compliment coming from a guy like Eric, who's been up on our main stage before, knows our audience very well, but is also one of the thought leaders out there from the strength and conditioning perspective as it applies to baseball.
Yeah, honestly, I've never personally met Eric, but to have him mention my name and, you know, as one of the guys that he would recommend was really an honor.
Absolutely. Nick, same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, without a doubt, Cressy's the leader, and we're all kind of working hard to chase him. And obviously to be in the same list with Zach and his program is just an honor.
And then if you don't know these two guys, you should. If you're on social media, you need to look these two cats up. Zach's account is at Zach Dechant, ZachDechant. You can also find Nick on there as well, at CCUBASBALL_AP. And they are just doing tremendous things, great thoughts, things that provoke some questioning of how we're going about training our athletes. Obviously, some videos, some images, things they're doing with the Chanticleers and they're doing with the Horned Frogs. And so let's open this up, because I think for our coaches, we like to set a stage and set a platform from where they can connect with you two. So Zach, why don't you kick this off for us? Talk to us about your career path that led you to be the strength coach there at TCU.
I actually came up playing college football, got a job with the Anaheim Angels, and that's kind of what started my path. Okay. Going down the baseball road. I had played college football. I had been in professional baseball. When TCU's job opened up, we don't have a separate department as far as Olympic sports go in football. Mm-hmm. So they wanted a guy that had kind of been around both arenas, and it was a perfect fit for me to come to TCU because, like I said, played college football, spent a couple years with the Anaheim Angels out there in pro ball. So it was just a perfect setup when I got the opportunity.
That's outstanding. Nick, same question, man. What land you there working with the CCU baseball team?
Yeah, I'm about 5'10", 190, so I was not a college football player. I started off, I had an amazing high school coach, Coach Alberry, who kind of helped me get to college baseball. I played at Chattahoochee Valley in North Georgia, mm-hmm. Which is a Division II, and Chattahoochee Valley is a junior college. And for my senior kind of last semester, I landed this just by happenstance, this job at Georgia Tech as an internship. And Steve Tambora, who's the baseball strength coach there, he also works with golf, took me under his wing. There was, I think, easily 20 interns there. And wow. He took me under his wing. I ended up getting a graduate assistant there position, and then worked my way to Western Carolina. And Barry Lippman, our athletic trainer here with baseball, gave me a call about this baseball only position with Coach Gilley and his staff, and man, the rest history. I'm just blessed to be here. I've been around some great coaches. So
that's interesting. You both have two different backgrounds, and let's open that up. Let's dive into that a little bit deeper. Nick, I'm going to start this off with you, especially coming from a baseball background. I'm sure, though, your growth, if you looked back at your perspective and that changing and evolving over time, can you take us back to when you first started? Like, what were your belief system at that point? And to just discuss your growth as a strength coach in this game.
When I was training in college, it was kind of a mix between random, whatever the coach wanted to do that day, CrossFit, and let's run a lot of miles. So I knew I had done some studying on my end, and I kind of came back when I first started being a strength coach and went the exact opposite route when I got my first job. I worked for Bobby Miranda at Western Carolina, and man, he was all about strength. So I thought that if my guys weren't limping out of the weight room, then I wasn't doing a good job that day. So definitely learned my lesson there. I always talk about, a lot of people bring this up, we led the nation in home runs and top 10 in strikeouts, and I always kind of point out that we had to lead the nation in sorest players going into a game. You know, we didn't put an emphasis on core, on movement. We weren't doing multi-planar. or single leg, single arm emphasis in the weight room. I basically only separated pitchers and position players and then guys injured. So we all back squatted. We all did some version of trap bar deadlift, unless you had a knee or a back injury. And so kind of definitely learned a lot since then. And we've rushed through our warm-ups and just kind of get in the lift as fast as we could. So
sure.
Those are things that kind of, and we'll talk about a little bit later on, so I don't want to dive in too much, but those were things that I've definitely looked at changing as I've grown.
That's great. That definitely sets a platform for us moving forward where we're going with this. Zach, same question, man. Talk about your growth as a strength coach, especially having a football background and now transitioning to a, you know, completely different non-contact sport. Can you open that up for us?
Yeah, to be honest, my path started as a meathead. strength was above all.
Sure.
And coming up through college, that's what my goal was, obviously bigger, faster, stronger at all costs. That's kind of what my philosophy was when I first started in this field too. You know, it was strength over everything. And I look back even 5 years ago at programs and I'm like, what am I doing here? that's how much we try to develop each year, you know, trying to get better every year. But now we're much more focused on movement, I guess. That's not to say that we don't still put an emphasis on strength, but we're so much more geared towards teaching athletes how to move correctly above everything else. And strength is truly a byproduct of our program instead of the other way around, where so many people get tied up in numbers and maxes. And that's what drives our program. That's not what drives our program here. Everything is based, like I said, on the movement. And then the movement creates the maxes, creates the numbers for us. It's not the other way around. So that's been the biggest change for me.
And you guys, I mean, again, if you've never listened to our podcast, we have on the best baseball minds in our game. Both of your head coaches have been on here. We've had Gilly, we've had Schloss, and we've had a number of different guys. And you guys just walked into the spider web of the show, which is continued growth, lifelong learning, challenging what you teach and what you know. And it's awesome to hear you guys both bring that perspective to this show as non-baseball coach, as strength coaches. And bringing that same element inside this show is just outstanding for the guys that are paying attention. I'm sure that light bulbs were going off as you guys were talking. We appreciate you opening that up. Now, I want to go back into this. So, Coach Dekant, can you open up? And let's give a John Gordon-esque approach. He talks about the telescope and the microscope. He's a future guest on this show, and I can't wait to unpack that with him. But I want to use that with you guys. If you could give us the telescope view of your approach to training your athletes there at TCU. What are some of the maybe the unique elements or specifics that you do? But then take us a little bit deeper. Give us the microscope view of the details, the frequency, the culture that you have in place there at TCU.
Well, the overall philosophy for our program is, you know, I kind of touched on it. We want our guys big, fast, powerful, and strong. Speed and power for us is the name of the game. So that's what we prioritize here. We're training our athletes. We begin everybody with a movement-based program so that it's our foundation program. We teach our five primary movements. And I spoke at the Texas High School Baseball Coaches Clinic here this last year on that very program. I'm speaking actually in New Jersey, I believe, at the, I think, Be the Best Coaches Clinic coming up. We're going to touch on that program, but that's what we start everybody out in. But again, our focus is always speed, power, strength. We want our guys fast and strong at all times. From there, as we break it down, our fall plan is a 5-day plan, generally with a high-low emphasis. So our Monday, Wednesday, Fridays are our high intensity days for us, where we start in our indoor with, you know, a 15-minute dynamic warm-up, and then we go into our speed and power plan. Everything for us is based around 0 to 10, out to 20 yards. We run a little bit longer, but it's about being fast every rep. So we give full rests. After we're done there, we come in the weight room and we generally do a total body lift head to toe. We use the body as it's used in athletics, as it's used on a baseball field. So it's a head to toe lift. Generally, those lifts last 75 to maybe 90 minutes, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Our Tuesday, Thursday days are kind of a low intensity recovery day. We want our guys to recover to be at a high level for those Monday, Wednesday, Friday workouts. That's kind of the microcosm of our program right there.
That's great. Is there any kind of cultural aspects to what you guys do? Or is there language that you use or mantras that you have inside your weight room?
The best programs in the world, to me, are the programs that create a competitive atmosphere that have that culture around them. You don't need a great program if you have that culture already. That's how important that aspect is of it.
That's it.
So when we come in the fall, when our guys start, everything is based around the team concept. We work out as a team. Yes, we've got, you know, separate lifts and things like that for pitchers versus position. They're doing, specific needs and all. But a lot of the program is built around the team aspect. So if warm-ups, team aspect, there's a lot of counting and things like that. It's a little bit military-based in a way. But we're trying to create that team culture, seeing who's going to lead, seeing who's a follower, who's a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Discipline problems. We use the team aspect a lot of times because we win as a team, we lose as a team. So that's kind of how we start that culture in the fall. And then that, truthfully, we set the rules and regulations up front, and then we can lax them as we go down the road throughout the rest of the year versus, you know, trying to rein a team in after you've let them go loose at the beginning.
Right.
It's impossible to do that. So we want to start the culture that Coach Losh has set from day one.
Nick, same question, man. Give us that telescope view of what you're doing there at CCU, but then dive us in a little bit deeper to the microscope view and get inside what's really happening there on a day-to-day basis with your guys.
Yeah, I think a team takes on the character of their head coach. And for us, Gilly is definitely a blue collar, one of the hardest working men that I know.
Mm-hmm.
But he has fun doing it. And I think that's something that when we've had success, I've only been here, this is now my third year, but obviously won it in 2016 and last year came up a little short. But when we have success, it's usually the guys who do have fun working hard.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody isn't, then they usually stick out like a sore thumb. And it's not even an issue that Gilly and I have to generally take care of. We have a senior counsel that honestly, man, they take a lot. Obviously, it's up to Gilly and myself to hold the team accountable on a daily aspect. But when there are individuals like that, usually it never even gets to that point for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're looking at the anatomy of kind of our program, we don't have a sports nutritionist or a sports scientist. I know Zach has the benefits of that. We're kind of more of a little bit further back from that. So Barry, he's our athletic trainer. Man, just an awesome ATC who's got his CSCS. He and I are kind of all things considered for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, we cannot train a bad diet. And we're always talking about nutrition, whether it's through texting, emailing, us talking, us having a team meeting. We're always talking about those things. That's a huge aspect of ours. And then when you go into kind of the anatomy of the lifting itself, this year we took a huge emphasis on mobility, activation, and core before we start. And then we're always recovering. So we jog over as a group. We generally have small groups other than Friday morning. We'll have anywhere from like 3 to 10 guys, and I'm doing like 8 to 9 groups that are on 30, 45-minute splits.
Mm.
Creates a long day, but when we have 43 guys, I'm doing pretty much right now, deep into the fall, about 26 different programs maybe just based off of the screen, which is a mix of FMS, which is functional movement screen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm PPI certified. And then I was also just had the awesome opportunity to work with Mike Buehle, who's now with Clemson basketball. But just learning how the guys move and evaluating that. So we kind of place them into what they need from those parts and then listen to the coaches and understanding that Gilly wants, if he could have a guy who stole 50 bases and hit 25 home runs, that's the guy he wants. So, mm-hmm. you know, trying to understand that we've got to be athletic, but the swing that Schnall teaches is definitely one that is a power aspect. So,
sure.
Kind of when we come into the lift, we do train, we're on 4-day splits. I do upper lower splits. So what that means is, for example, when I have them in the fall and we're not worrying about, you know, a huge practice schedule, we would generally go lower body on Monday, Thursday, and then upper body on Tuesday, Friday. And for us, you know, I definitely get what Zach's feeling. I think that's a great, great point. For me, I'm trying to stay in that there's a 32-hour rule. When you exhaust a muscle group, especially a major muscle group, hamstring, pecs, lats, I mean, we could go down the list. When you exhaust those, research has shown us that it takes 72 hours for them to fully cover. And then with 4 days, I'm able to get the density and the volume that leads to lean muscle mass for our guys. We're getting guys who are generally, 5'10", 140 pounds. I mean, we had a guy 2 years ago, 6'7", 158 pounds, so lean muscle mass is something that Gilly and I are always talking about. And then we try to allow that to kind of dictate their training from their practice schedule. I think that's something that a lot of coaches, especially if you're a small college coach or a high school coach, understanding that practice and what you do at practice has a huge implementation from what you did in the weight room. So your central nervous system is a huge aspect of that. So we try to, obviously, if we're going to do a lot of sprinting, a lot of base running, a lot of outfield individual work, those are the days that I'm going to try to do our upper body work. And we do our speed at practice and our warm up. So I don't have to worry about doing that too much anyways in the mornings. So that kind of frees me up to get my 4 day lifts. And then I think finally, the biggest part is it's not always what you do. I mean, you just heard it. Zach has 3 days a week splits and I have 4. Does that mean that one of us is right and one of us is wrong? No, but I think you would see, and I see from him, even though I don't know him all that well, that man, what he does really, really well. You aren't going to see those guys out there. They're not going to get hurt in the weight room. They're not going to get hurt in soft contact, with the ground on an easy play. I mean, those are huge aspects when you're talking about soft tissue, things like that, taking care of your ass. Definitely technique is the emphasis for us, and understanding that when we're putting an athlete together, they have to be athletic. So it's athleticism over. So Zach says movement. I agree with that. Absolutely. Over the strength, over the baseball specificity. We're definitely getting that first.
I'm hearing from both you guys, and tell me if I'm off on this, but I'm hearing there's a team aspect. There's certainly an overall approach and frequency and a mission behind your plan, but I'm also hearing some individuality inside each of your plans. You're certainly not just stuck in a pretty much bowl down to the pitchers do this and the position guys do this. And we all know that inside both those two demographics, there's varying strength levels, there's varying athleticism, there's varying body types. And it seems like you guys are really taking that a step further and really getting more individualized.
Absolutely. I think the biggest part too is, man, I know Zach does this because you see it. You don't get to the World Series for 4 years in a row just by having good recruits and great baseball coach. I think that goes a long way. Mm-hmm. But when you're trying to stand out, and for us, we're trying to compete with, we're in the Sun Belt. We're trying to compete with the ACC, SEC schools in the Southeast, obviously the TCUs, the Midwest. We have to be willing as coaches to do whatever it takes to give our guys that competitive advantage. Zach talked about it too, where he, the one heartbeat, the team aspect of it. And again, if you can see it in the way that those guys play. And for us, my goal is, when we get to the end of the year, when everybody else is the weakest, the way that we've trained, the way that I've individually built their programs, and the way that we eat, the way that we sleep, hopefully we're at a place where, like 2 years ago, where, man, we got so much stronger throughout the year because of the buy-in of our guys, because of the philosophy of our head coach and the coaching staff, but also because of, in my opinion, the way that Barry and I come up with their lifts individually and their eating plans and those things. That goes a huge way, in my opinion.
What do you got, Zach?
Sure. Yeah, building the individual programs, every one of our kids comes in, they get put through an 18-point screen process for us. Like Nick said, we use a little bit of the functional movement screen. There's some other things that I throw in with that as well. So we screen every one of our kids to find out what, weaknesses, imbalances, limitations, red flags that are going to pop up for us that maybe we didn't know about. And, some guys will say, well, we don't need to screen them, we just watch them and things like that. But the screen for us has been huge in that it's a way to communicate with our athletes. Because when we have 15 freshman kids coming in here that are getting ready to train, I don't have time to talk to them, to sit down with them in the middle of teaching them the squat, in the middle of teaching them, whatever movement we're doing, and ask them about if they've ever had any back problems, if they've ever had any elbow problems, growth plate problems. And not only that, but when they're first coming into the facility, those kids want to get after it. They want to prove themselves. They want to show you that they're there to work. They're trying to make a name for themselves. So they're not going to say, yeah, I've had back problems before. They're going to say, no, coach, I'm fine. No, I'm fine. I'm good.
Yeah.
And so that movement screen that we do has opened up a world of communication for us. And then based on that, then we can get into the individual nuances of each athlete. Like I said, we train in a team aspect a lot of the year, but within that, there's still an individual aspect in that each player has their own movements and individual things that we look at on recovery days that they'll do. A quick example, we've got a kid that lacks hip internal rotation, and in a program where, you know, a coach might say everybody squats, well, this kid, because of how he's built, how the Lord made him, he can't squat. We did x-rays on it to check it. Most people would just stretch the heck out of him. But we actually took it a step further, took x-rays on his hips and saw, guess what? This kid's never going to gain mobility. He's never going to gain that range of motion because this is how he was built. So he actually does a different lift than squat. So
wow.
When we see those things in the screen, we can actually individualize the program a lot more.
That makes total sense.
Yeah. When I was in college, we would max out the first day we got there. You know, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, that's just the way things were.
Sure.
Well, I have two herniated discs and two fractured vertebrae. Actually, I have two spinous processes that are no longer attached. They're gone. As a guy who potentially could have ran track, could have done certain things, to have to relearn how to walk, I think at the end of the day, too, a lot of coaches out there, and I see this mainly at the high school level, but I think we forget too, like there's a soul inside this, there's a heart, there's a person inside this training.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's what, you know, to me, I think there's a huge aspect. They trust us with their body.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're not identifying those issues coming in and we're not correcting things like posture, core alignment as best we can, then, you know, what am I really getting paid for if I work with one sport? You know, mm-hmm. That's sure. My opinion, but I think you can take that too, you know, as best you can to take care of that athlete, no matter what level you're at, and being smart in how you progress. And again, just like Zach said, the biggest thing is I want to make sure that I'm not setting my athlete up for failure. Mm-hmm. You know, that's huge.
It's interesting.
First, do no harm.
Yeah. That's important.
Yeah.
Coach White, kick this one off for us. I think if we took the helicopter view of your year-round approach, and that's certainly changed at least over the last 10 years, where, you know, we had baseball teams and players on campus, and we're working with them through the fall, through the spring, and a lot of times, especially in the small college levels, and then for the guys that are listening to the show, some of the high school coaches, those guys are kind of, for the summer months, they're on their own. And they're out there hopefully working out. We don't truly know. We'll see them, like you mentioned, when they show up in the fall and we max out on day one and see what they got. But Coach White, give us your helicopter approach to your year-round training in terms of what it looks like in the fall. What does it look like in winter and early spring? Then how do you maintenance in season?
Yeah, I think we're kind of entering into a time where, and Cressy talks about this all the time. I talk with my guys about this all the time, that once our guys go professional, it's so much easier for them to develop. I mean, when you're playing three seasons like you do in high school and college, I mean, who's not playing in the summer? I mean, if you got all your innings or you hit 360 and you want to stay on campus, sure, you know, that's one or two guys. But I think it's very important to understand that, like, when we're picking what we call our mesocycles and our macro cycles, I think it's very important to understand that, like, these guys are never really out of season aside from a few weeks here or there.
Right.
I wish I could change that. If it was up to me, I would have my guys on campus during the summer, you know, or majority of the guys who didn't get ABs, maybe those guys go. But when we're putting together our fall, we'll start with that. The biggest thing I'm looking at is who am I getting in? I mean, when you don't know when you're a freshman, we had guys who, when I got them, I could have sworn, or when I saw them in February, I could have sworn they were 10% body fat. And then when they come on campus, they're 23% body fat, and you're not even recognizing them.
Right.
You know, and then you've had guys the other way around who, you know, so I think the biggest point is starting with that screen. I mean, I think the Lord allows things to happen with my back. The biggest thing that I did was do more research on Dr. McGill, who's kind of the back specialist, if you will. I did more research from him and learned from what my athletes need, and understanding the nervous system, understanding the vertebrae and how they interact with muscles. So not to get too fine printed in it, but the biggest point is when they come in, we do the screen, we look at posture, we look at body types, but also understanding that I work backwards. So what are these guys going to get hurt by? And let's try to fix that before we look at athletic performance. And I want to get my guy from hitting, you know, 3 home runs to 12 home runs. Mm-hmm. So the biggest point that I'm seeing now is low back injuries are the number one injury in baseball. So it doesn't benefit you. And Zach and I agree wholeheartedly on this. If you're not doing a movement-based program, if you're not working in multi-planes. And what I mean by that is there's 3 main planes that we would look at, frontal plane, sagittal plane, and then transverse plane. So we don't have a ton of time to get into the particulars of that, but I've got to make sure that in every one of my lifts, I'm getting all 3 of those planes. I'm making sure that I'm setting up my athletes for success in that. We're resetting, you know, we'll have days where we're out here, we're swinging 400, 500, maybe 1,000 times. I don't know. I'm not sitting there with a clicker counting them, but I've got to make sure I'm resetting that spine before we even talk about, you know, what my guy is either safety bar squatting or front squatting that day. Mm. I mean, I think that's a huge aspect. Then when you look at the lifting in itself, we lift really hard in the fall. I'll be honest with you. There are pitchers. We generally have Saturdays off as a team. And my guys, if you're not throwing live or it's a long BP, bullpen that is, we're lifting that day. And we've kind of had a huge buy-in from Coach Thomas, who believes wholeheartedly in that. And what we've seen is, you know, guys might be a little sore throwing early in the fall, middle of the fall, even late in the fall. But when I take that density off them and we kind of create that volume deficit, and we see guys jump in velocity, they're also fresher. It just creates a better season for us.
Sure.
And so, you know, we could talk 1,000. I think Zach and I could go back and forth on this for the next 24 hours. But I think the main part for me is understanding that individuality is a big point. The screen, movements are a big point. And then we progress weight on top of that. Our guys come in and assuming that everything checks out in the screen and their medical history, I do start off with trap bar deadlift, and Zach and I have talked about this before. That's one that I start off with that he doesn't, and I respect that. Again, I have back issues. I understand that. For a squat progression, we start with goblet squat. And again, that's after we've spent a week teaching these movements without mm-hmm. any body weight. We'll have a dowel rod, connecting the head, shoulders, and foot on a single leg RDL or a hip hinge like an RDL. So I think, again, it's starting with we're putting the training wheels on and then we build it up. And what we found is when my guys are juniors and seniors, I mean, we're having to change our program to where what does it matter if my guy can squat 500 or 515 pounds, you know, mm-hmm. on a safety bar squat. It's about, then we're changing the whole program and we're making it all about power emphasis for them. So, you know, I hope that helps. I'm kind of a shiny guy. I chase the shiny. And a lot of times for me, I have to stay disciplined on what my guys are training and understand that when we're making a 4-week program, I'm staying within the emphasis of that. I think as strength coaches, you always want to, oh, I saw that on YouTube or I saw that on Twitter, and you want to jump that in. But I think you have to make sure that it fits within your confines of your program.
Makes total sense. Zach, same question. Your year-round approach, take us inside the different seasons and how you guys attack that at TCU.
Yeah, you know, for us, the fall season, like I talked about earlier, we're a high-low program where Monday, Wednesday, Friday are kind of our high intensities, Tuesday, Thursday, those low-intensity days. Mm-hmm. You know, to touch on those a little bit more, we do a lot of soft tissue work, self-massage, a ton of mobility, ton of movement, individual, you know, areas that our screen has showed us that we need to work on. We do some of those small muscle groups on that day just to basically let the CNS come down so that we can be at our peak again for the next high intensity day. When we get to the spring, to me, the spring is the best time for lifting for our kids. I will say this, everything starts at the top, and Coach Schloss puts a huge emphasis on our guys staying strong and training in season. That's the biggest problem I see with high school athletes.
Yep.
Is that these kids work their tails off in the off season and then don't show up in the in season. And they don't do anything, you know, well, I'm too busy. I'm playing right now. I got too many games. But the whole reason you worked your tail off in the off season was for the in season. That's and now great. They take 3 steps forward and it's 4 steps backwards. We're back at the bottom of the mountain the next year mm-hmm. in the off season to build back up again. And that absolutely drives me crazy because there's never going to be a better window of development for these kids than as teenagers right now. That's the biggest window you have. You got to take advantage of it. I get off on rants there, but Coach Losh does an amazing job emphasizing this and putting a huge emphasis on this, on the weight room and development. Our in-season plan, our starters are a two-time a week program with an optional third day. Some of our guys, like Evan Skaug last year, he was a three-time-a-day lifter. He wanted to grind. He wanted to lift three times a week. We move into our tier two guys, what we call our tier two guys, our bench contributors. These are all position guys, obviously, but our tier two guys, you know, a guy that comes in and pinch runs on the weekend, pinch hits. He might spot play on a Tuesday or a defensive specialist, something like that. Those guys are three times a week with me, and they train on the road when we're out there. Our tier three guys are our developmental crew. So that's red shirts, freshmen that might not be playing any. Those guys are generally going 4 to 5 times a week, depending on, you know, kind of our, depending on the time, the schedule, travel, things like that. When we get to our pitchers train 3 times a week, without fail. It's all set up based on reliever, starter. Every guy kind of has his individual rotation, you know, when they're throwing a bullpen and things like that, whether they'd like to do an upper or lower emphasis for the day. But those guys train 3 times a week. Why I say I love the in-season the most is because we are strongest in season. That's when our kids are the strongest because we slow cook them. I'm not that worried about the off season. We still train hard in the off season, but the in season for us is the biggest period of time that's uninterrupted. You know, in the fall, you've got the fall season, you work around a little block, you know, 7 weeks in there that you have time on the front end and the back end where you're not playing baseball, but it's kind of right in the middle. Mm-hmm. Then you have Thanksgiving breaks, fall breaks, all these things. Well, for us, January starts until basically, hopefully July. Mm-hmm. We have uninterrupted training where we can be consistent. And that's the biggest thing in season is consistency. As long as you can be consistent, you know, kids, one of the biggest problems I saw when I was at the pro ball level was, you know, a pitcher was going to throw. He's a reliever. He might throw tomorrow. Let's not lift him. I don't want him to be sore. But then he wouldn't throw. Then 3 days down the road, well, don't lift him because we're going to have to use him this weekend. Don't let him lift. I don't want him to be sore. But then he wouldn't throw. And now you're 10 days, 14 days into not training him.
That's right.
He comes in for a lift. Now he tells coach, man, I'm sore.
You can't throw.
Well, the kid hasn't lifted for 2 weeks. Guess what? We're going to have to throw him. Mm-hmm. This kid can't be sore. Stop lifting him. That was the biggest problem I saw, and we wanted to eliminate that. So we train our guys consistently. You know, it's a very consistent schedule. We rarely change movements in season because we don't want to create stiffness. We don't want to create that soreness. So, you know, that's one of my biggest pieces of advice for smaller schools, for high school coaches, is if you're consistent with your lifts, you don't even have to change anything. Just be consistent with what you're doing in season, and your guys can still train and make gains versus, you know, being very inconsistent or not training at all because you're missing a huge period of time.
Mm. That hit on, like, the soreness and the schedule issue, which, I was going to save towards the end, but, man, he nailed it. I think a lot of people misunderstand volume when training. So volume is generally, this isn't always the case because it depends on a novice lifter versus an experienced lifter, but volume is what's going to get you sore in general. It's a breakdown of muscle tissue. If your guys are used to training, it's a part of their process. Their body's used to it. And a lot of times what we try to create here, and Zach mentioned it, you create where your body is not only used to it, but it's part of the recovery process. It's literally a part of your body needing to get ready for that next game. Because as soon as that ninth inning is over, you go to that next game, it's a whole new animal. And so I think sticking to schedules is huge. Zach definitely nailed that on the head. I think with starting pitchers, if they're set, a lot of high school coaches, a lot of college coaches, they have a set. I'm pitching on Friday. I'm pitching on Saturday. You can literally work backwards and make sure that you're getting 3 and 4 lifts from those guys. And we'll talk about conditioning in a little bit, but I think all of those things are huge aspects into talking about your training program and your philosophy. And it absolutely starts at the top. If you don't have the head coach involved in this and he's not all in on it, it's almost impossible to keep the guys under wraps in season. I think Zach nailed that.
That is it. Yeah. Buy-in is huge. There is no doubt about that. Zach, I'm going to come back to you with this one. When you talk about goals or competitions, and I love you guys are doing the pre-screening on the front end, and it doesn't sound like gains are essentially in, hey, how many pounds are we putting up? It seems like there's a different plan that you're tracking your players' development and their gains. And anything creative that you're doing inside that are creating the goals but also the competitions?
To be honest, every day we want a competitive environment every day. Mm-hmm. Today, for instance, we did speed work, both position and pitchers. I mean, we train our pitchers with speed work all the time. Speed builds strength, strength builds speed. So we put them in situations where they're racing each other. We actually put up a poll today on Twitter because we had two pitchers finish right at the line, and somehow I videoed it. So we put up a poll today to see who won that competition. But we always want our guys competing at everything, in the off season especially. And then we actually we make a week, you know, like a bunch of schools. We have a week at the end of the semester where we kind of do an Omaha challenge, mm-hmm. where we break guys into teams. They draft each other, and then go through a series of, you know, six competitions with some team things involved. And it's and you know what? I understand that it's not built around what baseball players do, but at the same time, it's more for a culture effect. It's more to see who's going to lead. Mm-hmm. You can see who's putting everything into it, who's dogging it. Every member on the team sees that. And that's why we love the team workouts at the beginning of the year, even, because every guy in here gets to see who's going to bring it and who doesn't have it, who shuts down when it gets tough. Those are things that you know, I think everybody needs to see. And that's why we love the team aspect to it early in the year. But we really want to make a competitive environment in whatever we do at all times.
Love that. Nick, what would you add to that? Any goals or competitions, and how are you keeping track of development and gains inside your program?
Again, it stems from what your head coach really jumps on. And Gilly for us is all about, if we have a meeting, he's all about how are they moving in general and what's their lean muscle mass. So I think tracking for us, lean muscle mass is a huge part. It doesn't take, for high school and small college, it doesn't take a whole lot to do that. I think that's something that can easily be done, you know, once, twice a semester to just kind of log and see where you're at, see where your training's at, see where your athletes are at. But I think it gets overplayed, but a lot of what we do as far as that competition is that week before Thanksgiving. We're doing our squat variation, our deadlift variation, broad jump, vertical jump. Position players are running 60s. I'm not a huge fan of 60s. Gilly knows that, but that's a huge part of baseball. So it kind of allows our guys to kind of train towards that aspect. We don't do it often, but it's just that last little bit. Mm-hmm. Then we'll do position players. They'll do dumbbell bench if that's part of their program, and then single arm bench for pitchers, again, if that's part of it. But I think, like, on a tracking aspect, the biggest point for us is tracking progressions. We're not big on, I don't like to generally put guys on the same rack who are, you know, who are going to sit there and be alpha dogs. I think you love that, but in the scheme of training, I don't want my guy who is 15 or 20 pounds away from the guy that he's competing with for a position to be lifting, and he's always constantly trying to chase that number. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. you can get into a lot of trouble in the weight room for that. I think if we were to break that down, I'm not saying anybody out there does this, but I'm saying for us, I'm incredibly careful to chase numbers. I don't think that that's a competitive part, but where competitions do find their way in our program is in speed, I think. When we're looking at speed and power, you just bring out just an innate quality in a human when you put him up against somebody and his buddies are there, his teammates are there, and it's, he either gets smoked or he smokes them.
That's it.
So we'll have one day out of the week. We generally have, especially kind of in season in the fall, we'll have one day where we're working mechanical work, or maybe 2 days where we're working mechanics. And then we have one day where I don't say anything coaching-wise, mechanical-wise. We set it up and you just run fast. And we do bungee work. We'll do some overtraining, some undertraining here and there. It's not like that's a huge part of what we do, but when we put guys on the clock too, on some of those aspects, you see guys competing for every tenth of a second. And that's where I want it. I want the competition in that. But again, I think sometimes we can get a little too carried away. I think Zach does it. as well as it can be done on that aspect, where you're toeing the line of competing versus, hey, how do I stay within my program, understanding that February 16th all the way through June 30th is our major time. That's when we compete.
Love it. Yeah. Now I can hear it in your all's voice. You're foaming at the mouth to get to this agility and speed element of this conversation. So I'm just going to jump right into it. Coach White, take us into that. Give us more details on how you teach the elements or the methods that help emphasize the speed training element for your players. How are you teaching explosion? What are some of the conditioning ideas that you guys use that maybe could help a listener paying attention to the show?
Man, I honestly think, Chief, this is probably where I've learned the most. In the past 8 years. I was under Steve Tambora at Georgia Tech, and man, he's literally one of the best in simplifying this. And I've just taken that out. They don't work speed a whole lot. That's just not as huge of a aspect of Coach Hall's philosophy as it is Gilly. If Gilly had a team that could literally steal a base 1 through 9, we would do that. We would put those guys on the field. So since I've gotten here, I've just jumped in that in a huge way. But I think we get lost in the fact of, hey, I want to get my guys faster, but it doesn't do you any good if you're not training in a way that they're not going to stay healthy, again, February through June. So we work backwards on that. I teach them how to land, how to stop first. That's a huge quality. Essentially, the terms that we use, chest over knee, knee over toes. And while that's not a perfect exact example, it gives them a feeling. Most of our guys are either kinesthetic or visual learners. So the cues, they're important, but they're not as important as me demoing it, me being perfect, and them seeing it and seeing themselves. We use a lot of video work for us. When we're going through, I think landing is a huge aspect. Obviously, in a generally non-contact sport, you're trying to avoid the non-contact ACLs, the non-contact ankle twisting, sprains, all of those. But the biggest thing is, if I can't land, change direction, stop efficiently, the number one injury is a low back. So it always works its way up the chain. So I think that's something that, before I ever talk about drills, I think that's important to keep hold of. So for us, we work our way up isometrically. I teach them how to hold that position. We'll do a depth drop of maybe about 10 or 12 inches. I think most coaches, you know, if you're doing like a depth drop at 24, I see it all the time with female athletes, 24, 30-inch depth drops. You're not really doing anything. You're not doing any good in that. So we start with that isometric hold. And what that means is, by the time your feet have touched the ground, there's no movement in your ankle, knees, or hips. You're able to stop your body weight without moving. And you just hold that force from the ground. Then we'll work on our eccentric. So I teach our guys how to land athletic positions. On Twitter, that's, you know, a lot of times on Twitter, you get like the big fancy things. That's what everybody follows. That's the likes or the, you know, the awesome motivational speeches. But for us, the biggest part is, I teach our guys, we have a fire down series that I teach our guys how to land. We're landing on 2 feet. We're landing on single leg, unilateral. We're doing, lateral bounds. We're doing 45 degree front bounds. We're doing multiple bounds, but it all starts at teaching them how to land, because essentially it's very similar, your landing position on a jump to your stopping and essentially your starting position on changing directions or when you stop your sprint, if that makes sense. So sure. That's a very important position to us. It doesn't matter how much you squat. It doesn't matter how much you deadlift or you RDL, if you're not being efficient in those positions on the baseball field, then it's all for naught. And so those are huge for us. I think it's also important to incorporate what we call our base running lean. So we'll have our guys on the wall, kind of a side plank position on the wall, and we'll teach our guys how to hold core, how to hold hip flexor. And you're smoked up on that. And we've got a video on Twitter of that too. But essentially, I'm teaching our guys how to be comfortable keeping their foot flat on the ground, not just on the corner of those cleats. We always talk about keeping 7 spikes in the ground on our Under Armour cleats. That's what it takes to not fall on your butt, essentially. And to be efficient in that, a lot of hamstring injuries come from athletes who have not trained working in that base running lean. You see it all the time. Hamstring injuries, they're like 5 or 6 on each team when you're 2 weeks into spring training. Okay, right. You know what the guys have been doing or not been doing, if that's the case. Then when you look at, when you look at acceleration, we group our sessions into two. We talk about max effort. That's the competition. That's our speed day. And then we group it into mechanical work. Upper body mechanical, I'm trying to stay chin to pocket in general, just keeping this quick. And then lower body, we teach a lot of A skips, a lot of A bounds. I'm big into cycling from heel to butt. A lot of our guys that I get, and this is just my guys, I'm not saying this is across the board, mm-hmm. but a lot of guys that I get, they're heavy back kickers, which is going to put a lot of strain on that low back. You're going to anterior pelvic tilt. You're going to have strain on the hip flexors. And you're going to get a lot more movement out of the hamstrings than you really desire, which is going to put a lot more strain on them. The fastest athletes in the world aren't necessarily, quote unquote, the fastest if you look frame by frame, but they are the most efficient. And I think in baseball, we just say, hey, line up and run 100 yards, or line up and, we've got to do bow and arrows, or we're doing our laps today, and we call that speed. I would be careful just to make sure, Zach spoke on it, when we're doing our speed work, it's generally less than 15 yards. I give our guys maybe 5 hard steps. That's what we're looking for. I'm trying to teach acceleration. 95% of our game, just on a guess, is acceleration. So, again, those are huge parts of ours. And then I think we have to train in the weight room the same way. So making sure that I'm teaching posture, I'm teaching RDLs are a huge part of ours, but eccentric hamstring strength to make sure that we're not getting those hamstring strains in season. I think those are huge. And kind of getting back to acceleration, heel under hamstring, and then I'm bringing that heel to the glute for recovery phase. And I'm trying to get my knees up. I think in baseball, because we run so much, you just don't see a whole lot of knee drive. But essentially, when we're looking at driving those knees up, a huge part of it is allowing your body time to create force and to recover from the force that it just put into the ground. So, again, those are huge for us. And what we see is, when we get guys who they come in, they have hip flexor issues, hamstring issues. When we create efficient athletes in the weight room and out on the field, some of those things tend to find their way out. And so that's big for us.
Love that. Zach, same question, man. Dive into agility and speed. How are you approaching that, teaching explosion, conditioning your guys? I love that.
Yeah, I mean, Nick touched on it. The basics are what we teach. And to most people, the basics are boring. But that's really where everything has to start. So for us, it's teaching body control, just like he talked about. We teach all of our incoming guys body control. We teach them how to land before we teach them how to do anything else. Baseball guys are not good jumpers. That's what we found.
Sure.
So we want to teach them that body control and how to control a deceleration first. For us, our pitchers, we hammer deceleration, stopping on one leg, stopping in an athletic position, a lateral stop, because that's what they do on the mound. We want to replicate what they're doing on the field with what we do in our training. A guy, how many times you seen it? A guy goes to field a bunt, feet slip out from under him because his shoulders are behind his hips, knees are out in front,
mm-hmm.
can't make the play. Those small things, we preach, little things matter. Those small things in training for us are what become huge things later on. We don't want to let those small things build steam like a snowball rolling down a mountain. It's like I tell the guys, this could happen in the ninth inning of a super regional game. And now you look back and say, man, I should have done a better job in the fall in my deceleration work. But that's what we do. With our position players, we train linear speed. I have a lot of multi directional starts, I guess, because everything you do as a position player on the field is basically reacting to a stimulus and running in a straight line, hopefully. If you've got outfielders that are taking banana paths and cutting like cone drills and things like that, you've probably got some problems. So we train linear speed, but we train it out of a huge amount of positions, facing away from where we're running at a 45-degree angle so that they have to work on creating that first step quickness, first step acceleration, gaining ground. The principles for us is we train fast to be fast. All of our runs have full rests in them. And the same thing Nick said, their emphasis is 0 to 15 yards. Ours is, 0 to 20 or so. We go out to 30 yards, but you'll never find us running, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100-yard sprints with short rests. Everything we do, we want our athletes at full speed for every rep. So short runs, come back, full rest, race again. That's the nuts and bolts of what we do as far as agility, speed training, go for us.
Love that.
Yeah, I think that's good. And Sheets, one of the biggest things too that you see, and Zach freaking nailed this home, but man, there's just this huge need to be like so well conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
Between, you know, I think between the lifting, we have incredibly tough practices. So I do have to do a little bit more conditioning the first 4 weeks before they start team practice.
Sure.
And the only thing that we generally do as far as a conditioning standpoint, we have a football field right outside our weight room. It's the field that our football team plays on. But we'll do what we call half lap. So you're running around the field from field goal to field goal, and we're sprinting that. And that's generally like 25 seconds or under, mm-hmm. and then they'll jog around. So to start again, and I'll start them again. But the biggest point in that is we do want to teach a little bit of aerobic recovery. I think that's the biggest part for baseball. You could be 3-2-2 out stealing 4 or 5 times. I mean, you can steal for us. We could steal first in the next, or sorry, steal second in the very next pitch, steal third base. And then the pitch after that, we're doing a safety squeeze. You know, you got to make sure that there is a little bit of that aspect. And we're always sprinting onto the field. That's definitely a Gilly thing. It's a characteristic for him.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest point is understanding that when you're looking at these energy systems, the main energy system, the phosphagen that we're going to stay in is 0 to 9 seconds. And then the secondary one that we're going to stay in, it's anaerobic glycolysis, is up to 30 seconds. So anything over 30 seconds is going to deteriorate us from being, like Zach said, being fast, being powerful, being strong. It's just taking away from the end goal.
It's interesting. I think you guys are definitely making our coaches that are listening to this question some things, or at least maybe approach their training a little bit differently and hopefully incorporating some of the stuff that you guys are opening up. And I do want to go back to something that you guys are still referencing in terms of those kids that show up on campus, and both of you do. You have new crops of athletes that show up on campus each year, and you said the screening process, you've got to dive in and figure out who this person is, what their training background is, what experience do they have. So Coach Deccan, if you can open this up for us, when those kids show up, what can a high school coach paying attention to this? How can he better prepare his players?
Well, with our guys, we bring them in, we start them in that foundation program. For us, it's 5 primary movements that our entire program and all future development for our guys build upon. You know, Matt Carpenter's a guy that I've been with for 11 years. You know, he's a Major League All-Star.
Mm-hmm.
I started him out my first year as a junior in that foundation program. He still uses the basic movements that he built back when he was a junior right now. You know, he's in here training currently. We're still using the same movements, albeit he's advanced into a more specific program, and there's a lot of nuances to it, but the same movements still apply.
Mm-hmm.
So we start all of our guys with that foundation program, which is for us a squat pattern. For us, it's the front squat, a hinge pattern, an RDL for us is that hinge pattern, an upper body push and a upper body pull. For us, that's the reverse pull-up or a horizontal row and a hand pickup push-up. And then we want to teach our ISO core series. You know, like Nick's touched on a lot, he's had back injuries. I was the same way. Stuart McGill was a guy that changed my opinion on everything I believed in going forward with the core. So we hammer an ISO core program, which is planks, controlling the pelvis, glutes. That's the number one thing that I see with high school athletes. That is off. Is there's too much importance or too much dominance on the front side?
Right.
You know, you're pretty on the front side. You perform on the back side. We want the backside trained. Glutes and scaps for us, from what I see, are way too weak coming in from a high school program. And then you start talking to the kids, and there's a, you know, we bench press, we incline press, we dumbbell bench press, and we did push ups. And the first thing I'll say is, well, what'd you do for your hamstrings? What'd you do for your glutes? What'd you do for your scaps? What pulls did you do? And they'll look at me with a blank stare. You know, you're pretty on the front side, you perform on the backside. We need more backside training than we do front side, especially with a baseball athlete, in my opinion.
Love that. Coach White, what would you add to that?
I think, man, the biggest thing that we're seeing, Zach just hammered this pretty well, but when you look at a weak core, I think a lot of people, when they think core, they think just your abdominals in general, you know, the sections. But understanding that, like, glutes in golf, glutes are king. I mean, that's TPI says that all the time. And in baseball, it's very similar. The glutes unlock a lot of potential to what your hips can actually do. And without getting into too much of that, I think another part that I see is just weak and imbalanced, like single arm, single leg. One of my mentors, Jason Mengucci, he's the assistant strength coach for the Carolina Panthers. And every year I ask him, you know, what's the difference between your guys who are staying 13 years and your guys who are staying 13 months in the NFL? With literally every year he talks about the single leg strength, balance, and power. Because all of those athletes, when you get to the NFL level, are great athletes.
Mm-hmm.
All of those athletes, you know, they're absolutely phenomenal. But the ones who stay are the ones who either inherently have it or they've seen that it's such a great detail that it needs to be a part of their training. Well, I think it's the same thing for us. I mean, we get guys who, you know, you ask them, you know, what you've done in high school. Well, they can squat 450. Well, they can't do a body weight squat. Okay. What are you doing squatting 450? What are you doing with the barbell on your back anyways if you can't do a regular body weight squat? So that's a big part for me is understanding that, like, again, we've talked about being a movement philosophy. Make sure your athletes can move. Lose your ego. A lot of strength coaches, I think we have to lose our ego and understand that we've got to evaluate that. And then don't be scared to do single leg. You know, you can call them regressions if you want to, but for us, they're actually progressions. In a lot of your training, we're about 70% unilateral training in what we do. And then for us, and Zach's the same way, we've talked about this, is bench pressing versus push-ups. I think so many athletes that we get come in, they've had a slap tear or UCL surgery, Tommy John. I think, and you talk to them and they're doing barbell benching, but they can't do a proper push-up, which allows for the scap to do essentially what it's doing in a throwing motion. The movement patterns, the weak core, I mean, you can do 1,000 sit-ups, but if you can't hold what we call an RKC plank for 30 seconds, then in our opinion, you have a weak core. It's not going to be a something that's going to be able to propel you to high levels of athletic performance in baseball. And then, again, Zach touched on this, but teaching the hinge versus the squat, and those are huge aspects that a lot of our freshmen, they don't understand the difference. They can't turn on one to turn on the other.
I was talking to a small college coach today, one of my best friends, and prepping for this interview and talking to him about who I was going to have on today. And he gave this question. I said, man, just rest easy. That question's going to be asked because you got to know your audience. And again, not everybody has a weight room that mimics what you have at TCU, Zach. Not everybody has a weight room and a staff around you like you have there at CCU, Nick. And so if we got a lot of small college guys who their weight room could be 6,000 square feet, it could be 600 square feet. Okay, we've got high school coaches that pay attention to the show that may not have a weight room, or if they do, they're sharing it. Maybe they're out in the hallway, or maybe they're doing a lot of things at the field or out in the parking lot. So, Nick, I want to pose this to you, and I want you to kind of offer what you think for those guys that are paying attention, but they really want to get their players bigger, faster, stronger. What would you offer them? What are some creative ways that they can still train their athletes, even if they do have, let's call it a bare-bone setup?
Number one is keep it super simple. In so many ways, I think a lot of strength coaches and myself, you know, even today, but especially in the past, would probably be better off just in a warehouse with a couple dumbbells and a squat rack. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take a whole lot to do this. We've been doing this for hundreds of years, thousands of years. And I think so many times we can overthink this process, but, I would kind of go from there and say, just be great at the basics. For us, a lower body lift for even some of our upper athletes in season could even look like a goblet squat or reverse lunge, RDL, single leg RDL, a lateral lunge variation, anti-extension, anti-lateral flexion core, and we can talk about that in a little bit. Those go a long way. And I just mentioned a lower body lift that would probably smoke up 99% of the athletes out there.
Sure.
And all you needed was a couple of dumbbells, and some body weight. Again, Zach mentioned for him, horizontal row is a huge part. Man, how simple is it to just set up a horizontal row, a push-up station? You can add weight if your guys are progressed to that, or you're teaching the maybe on a physio ball or on a med ball for variation. Adding bands for things like single arm pulls and maybe instead of a kettlebell swing, maybe a band pull through. I think you can get creative in a lot of ways using body weight, dumbbells, bands. But the biggest part for us too is, man, if you learn proper movements and efficient movements, you can progress them, yes. But if I were a high school strength coach, I would try to start with like my seventh and eighth graders if I could, if I had any way to get my hands on them and teach them. They would not even touch a dumbbell, a barbell, anything. We would teach movements. That's what today, I mean, if you look at it, the athletes today, I grew up playing three sports, climbing trees. I was always outside. My dad kicked me outside if I was watching TV for longer than 3 seconds. You know, nowadays, they're literally playing Xbox through the night. Mental toughness for some of my athletes, and this is my athletes, is getting up to eat dinner before they get back on the Xbox. You know, having to get up and break that 2 or 3 hours apart. I mean, I think sometimes when we can talk about posture, and I think Zach does a great job, I'd like to think that we do a decent job here, but when you get back to the simplicity of it, it's working your way up in movements, being really efficient at what you're doing, and don't overcoach your bounds. You know, I see so many coaches that are teaching all these med ball routines or all these Olympic lifts and things like that, and you don't want to outkick your coverage. I think you can just keep it simple, have a quality program that is involved in just the movements. And Zach mentioned most of them, so I don't even have to go back over them. But I think those go a long way. Just having a quality program, at the end of the day, it's about playing baseball. It's not about lifting weight.
Well, Zach, Nick laid the platform for you, buddy. Keep expanding on that. In terms of that bare bone setup, go for it.
For us, you know, simple. It's keeping it simple, just like he touched on. If it's important, you have to make time for it. And obviously, this side of the equation is important versus what's going on a baseball field being just as important. But true development, it doesn't just take place on a baseball field. It has to take place, you know, outside of that, in the weight room, on the on the turf, whatever the case is, you know. But less is more. There's one of the big problems we see. There's too much variation. I talked about that foundation program that we use, the five movements. That's a program right there. That's a program.
That's right.
All you need is a barbell, body weight and barbell, and you can do, you know, those five movements. That's really all there is to it. To touch on one of the earlier questions you asked, one of the biggest changes that I've made in the, especially in probably the last 3 years, is that I've been getting away from more variation. I actually do way less variation now. Coaches want to change stuff every day, every week, every month. You know, Monday's workout's different from Wednesday's, from Friday's, and the next Monday was different from this Monday. You don't need to do that. We want to let our athletes adapt to the stimulus. We want to get them very good at a few things. We want to get them good at moving correctly. And when you take that stimulus away, when you change it all the time on them, especially these youth athletes, these younger kids, they can't get good at it. They can't get good at a front squat or a hip hinge or anything because you change stuff way too much. You don't need that variation. You know, like we've touched on, simple. Less is going to be more for you in this case.
That's awesome. Good. That's really good. Zach, I'm going to let you kick this last question off, guys. You've been so awesome with your information, your content, and obviously we've kept you for a while. But I want to get to this question because we never end a show without asking for advice. And so, Zach, if you could, what's the best advice that you would offer a coach listening to this show? You've offered so much, but from your perspective, from a strength and conditioning perspective, and then also, what's the worst advice that's out there that they need to absolutely run the opposite direction from?
We could make an entire show on some of those things.
Sure,
but,
we could.
For me, it's making time to develop in season and off season with your athletes. Just what I touched on. It has to be a priority in the off season and the in season, not just you know, one or the other. And this ties into my worst advice. There's such an overkill right now in lessons. And, you know, I have two pitching coaches. I've got a lesson on this night with this hitting coach, and then I go somewhere else and do a lesson with him. If these kids, honestly, at the youth level, middle school, high school level, would cut half of their lessons out and use the other half of that time in training, they would see much, much, much better results. Because it's the strength side, everything that you gain from strength training, from speed training, from learning how to jump, learning how to move correctly, is going to benefit you on the baseball field. Mm-hmm. Whereas the baseball field doesn't necessarily make you into a better athlete. We're building the foundation to raise the skills that you're doing on the baseball field. But if all you're doing is lessons and pitching, you know, throwing a bullpen every 3 days with a different pitching coach, that doesn't necessarily build that motor. We want to build the motor so that you have speed down the track. If you don't build the motor, you're not going to get faster. You're not going to get stronger. You're not going to get the gains that you want to see in a baseball field. So that ties into, you know, my best and worst advice is make time for development outside of baseball.
Nick, follow that up. Yeah. Best and worst advice, my man.
Man, that was good. I think for me, the best advice would be to look at it long-term. Long-term development is going to be, man, it's tough. And especially in today's day and age where, you know, it's what can you do for me right now?
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to literally, as a high school coach or a small college coach that's doing this on your own, I think you have to make sure that you're not getting impatient and you're trusting the process. I think process is a word that gets thrown out a lot, but you've got to make sure that when we're putting these programs together, Zach said this in a huge way, like not changing it every day. We put them together 4 weeks at a time, but you're also putting it together not only for a freshman, a sophomore, but a junior and a senior. You're looking to make sure that I want my guys to be able to play baseball for the next 30 years if their talents let them.
Mm-hmm.
So many times you see a guy out of high school or out of college, and I mean, he's literally the best he's ever been. There's no more area there because you just went 1,000 miles an hour and you just started chasing the shinies and you went all over the place. And then kind of on the flip, I mess with Schnall all the time on this. Schnall's our associate head coach. I tell him that there's a lot of players out there who their parents have spent, and Zach talked about this, but their parents have spent hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on their swing, and they have this perfect swing, but they can't hit the ball over the outfielder's head. So the athletic development that Zach was talking about that only happens by thoroughness, by taking your time in the weight room, is huge. The worst advice that I've seen is when you try to turn in programs kind of from a CrossFit, Olympic lifting and things like that, and try to make them into a baseball specific workout. I get like 10 emails a week, and so many of them are involved with, hey, I'm doing this for CrossFit, I'm doing this, is this okay? Or, you know, I think we have to get back, and again, we've talked about this, we've hit it on the head, but keeping it simple, you know, and understanding that if you're a coach, stay in your lane. Make sure that you're doing something you're comfortable with, but it's long-term development-centered.
It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, again, we are so thankful that you took time to jump on our calls from the Clubhouse podcast. So much information and content to digest. Again, I hope, coaches, you were taking notes this entire show. You needed to be. And if not, go back and re-listen and make sure you get all the quality information these guys shared with us today. We love the fact that both your head coaches and your staffs are loyal ABCA members, and we hope to see you guys at a future show down the road. But once again, your information today was certified audio gold that'll help our guys revamp and maybe recharge their approach to strength and conditioning for their players and their programs. Again, Zach Dakin from TCU and Nick White from Coastal Carolina. Guys, thanks for jumping on our show today, and we wish you the best of luck moving forward. Thanks again.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Thanks, Keith. Thanks.
There is a lot to take in there, guys. Wow, those are two of the very best for a reason. And we're so thankful to offer this information up to our coaches and our listeners. Huge thanks to Zach Dakin from TCU and Nick White from Coastal Carolina for carving out some time to jump on the podcast with us. And another reminder, find these guys on Twitter, at Zach Dakin and also at CCUBASBAL_AP. Scroll through their content, the videos, the thoughts that these guys are putting out there. It's beyond impressive. Thanks again, Zach and Nick. We wish you and the Chanticleers and the Horned Frogs the very best as you guys move into the spring season. Now, speaking of Twitter, this show will always be followed up by our hashtag ABCA chat that's coming to you guys. Our next one, Tuesday, November 14th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to discuss your insight to strength and conditioning for your players, how you approach getting guys stronger and more functional in your programs. Mark it down on your calendars. Come check in. Our next hashtag ABCA chat on Twitter, Tuesday, November 14th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Plus, make sure you're already following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. You can always find me on there as well at CoachSheets3. And you can always reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. Remember the importance of adding a strength and conditioning show into the podcast lineup. That was directly from your feedback. When you guys drop me a line or you send me a message or give me a call, that's the most rewarding part of this, is hearing what our coaches want, and we work to get that into the fold. So again, always reach out. Let us know how we can improve the show, who else we should be thinking about talking to. I just want to talk the game with you guys, get your feedback, hear your thoughts. let us know how we can help. Now, membership into the ABCA is going through the roof right now. More and more coaches are investing in their development and joining the baseball coaches fraternity here at the ABCA, and we would love to have you and your coaching staff join us. Now, if you want to talk about investing in yourself, make plans to join the ABCA, then make plans to join us January 4th through the 7th in Indianapolis for our ABCA convention. It's our biggest event of the year, and it's at the perfect time to recharge the batteries before our seasons kick in and the spring is upon us. So head over to our website, abca.org, click on membership, click on events, see for yourself what we're doing here at ABCA, and keep in mind, our early bird deadline for our convention is Friday, November 17th. It is coming up quickly, and then the price goes up from there. So don't waste another second. Stop wondering what all the excitement is about. Don't be the coach that's sitting at home in January watching Twitter going, man, I wish I would have been there. Come experience 4 days of baseball heaven right beside us and 6,000 of your coaching buddies. Join us in Indy this January. Now, we do have two more weekends left of our ABCA Barnstormers Clinics Tour this fall. Tennessee coaches, if you're out there listening, get ready. We're packing up for this weekend, and we're going to head over to Nashville and Memphis to help educate coaches and strengthen more baseball communities around the Midwest, with our last weekend set to drive down the street from our national office and stop at Duke University and then the University of South Carolina to close out this fall's tour. If you want more information and also how to register, head over to abca.org/clinics. You can also follow along this Barnstormers tour on Twitter. Search hashtag ABCA Clinics, click latest, and you can scroll back through all the videos that we've put out from every single clinic that's been on this fall's tour. Also, another huge thanks to our great friends over at AstroTurf, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. We appreciate their support of this podcast. And if you want more information on what they're doing, head over to their website, astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com. Gain some insight into what they're doing for facilities around the country and find out why AstroTurf has been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. With another podcast in the books and coaches around the world getting better across every single front, every fundamental, the details and insight from some of the very best minds in the game are on our airwaves. And we always ask, just keep sharing the show with those around you. Your staff, your players, the coaches in your area and communities, heck, the coaches in your phone should know about this. It's all in an effort to grow the game of baseball. And without your help, guys, these efforts surely fall short. And as always, thank you all for listening in. You're always dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, and we appreciate that. So until next week, we ask you keep growing, you keep developing, you keep challenging yourself inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.